everyone. Welcome to GameSpot After Dark, episode 231. I'm your host this week, Jean-Luc Seipke, joined by Jake Decker.
Hello, I've got the squeaky chair.
And Michael Heim.
What to do, baby? It's your motherfucking boy.
Hey.
I do not have the sinky chair. I don't have the squeaky chair, so I am good this week. Still got no ass cheeks, though, so my booty probably going to hurt by the end of this podcast.
Yeah, same.
Okay.
Damn.
Well, maybe we can order you a special.
Get me a BBL. If I could expense a BBL, that'd be crazy. Let's go. A BBL?
What?
Brazilian butt lift. Implants for your booty cheeks.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
No lie.
Mm-hmm.
The larger conversation about BBLs and like the wider social acceptance of a BBL, I have seriously considered it. Like
aren't they like surprisingly dangerous? Like
yes,
like aren't they like more dangerous than you'd think they'd be?
Yes,
like
yeah. I've heard horror stories about it because, I mean, you mess around like around that area, like your back and your tailbone, and like if something goes off there, it fucks up a whole bunch of other shit. But like the operations themselves, because a lot of people get them done in, well, I'm blowing up their spot right now. It's like people get the go. It's like same thing where people go to Turkey to get hair implants.
The hair implants.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah.
So
the Dominican, it's much cheaper.
Yeah. And they're like, there's a legit industry for it. Like they've stumbled upon this phenomenon that they can hang their hats on. Be like, people come here specifically for this.
That's crazy.
BBLs in the Dominican Republic are kind of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
People go to DR to get BBLs, and like, you know, it's like anything else. There are people who can do it really well, and then there are like cheaper options that run the risk. So it's like anything else. You know what I'm saying? Pro tip there, if you want to hit up DR, get a BBL. I might do that. I've been meaning to go to DR. Moises, hit me up. We'll get a BBL and I'll expense it.
expense it with who?
Yeah, with who?
I don't know. With the government? It's a tax benefit. I don't know. I'm on camera all the time.
You should just do it and then submit like your receipt. What's it called? Receipt of work to like just a bunch of different.
Yeah, see who takes it.
What's it called? God damn.
Statement of work.
Yeah. I guess. Yeah, that's not the word I'm thinking of. But yeah. Statement of work.
Yeah. You just like
Tam will approve it.
Tam approves it.
Yeah, just bill a bunch of different places.
See, it's okay on it.
GameSpot after BBLs. Let's go.
Hey. It's another week in video games.
Yeah.
It's another week on this earth. This bitch of an earth. I don't know if did you guys want to talk about kind of the big thing that happened this week, which was the shutting down of digital media legend Rooster Teeth,
man.
That happened. That's crazy.
That was wild.
Yeah. I mean, I like grew up watching Rooster Teeth like a lot. Like especially like I think I came in around like season 4 of like Red versus Blue and was like, dude, this is like what? It's
what
like
game were they in? Was that still Halo 1?
It was Halo 2.
Halo 2? Okay.
It was Halo 2. And I was like, yo, like it's like a movie, but it's in a video game.
It's machinima.
That's like crazy. High level. And like, it, not only was I like a big fan of it, but like it inspired me to be like, yo, I could do that. Like I could make machinima. And like, I made some real shit. Machinima with some friends in high school.
I did planted the seeds. Yeah.
I did the same.
But you know, like, yeah, I mean, like, you know, they had that and then they kind of like grew out from there into like a media empire. You know, they had the podcast and they did all their skits and the Achievement Hunter and all that stuff. Yeah. Like they kind of pioneered Let's Plays.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like they don't get enough credit for that, but like they didn't like invent the concept, but like they were kind of like there at the
kind of perfected it
and perfected it. Yeah. And
Ruby, shouts out to Ruby.
Yeah, Ruby as well. You know, I was really into those first couple seasons, fell off after that. I haven't been in a Rooster Teeth in a long time just because, like, it's like content changes, people leave, you know, like, things you're into aren't there anymore, and that's okay.
Yeah, it's just different. And plus, once you start doing that kind of job as well, it's like it feels like now I'm familiar with this how these things get made and actually doing this stuff. So
100%,
like the entertainment that I consume now, it doesn't necessarily have to do, cause I'm involved with when you're involved with that kind of stuff,
100%,
it's just, you know, I'm not going to spend my free time engaging with that kind of stuff anymore. So it's like not necessarily anyone's fault. It's just, you kind of grow out of it.
Totally.
You still have like that reverence and that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is
especially,
that's like my exact relationship with Giant Bomb. I can tell you the exact moment I stopped actively watching Giant Bomb.
Damn.
It's the second I got a job at GameSpot because I'm like,
oh, yeah.
Dude, I do this shit 9 to 5.
Yeah.
Sometimes more.
I used to listen to podcasts all the day, every time. And then I started at GameSpot and I was like, I'm hearing about all this shit before I listen to the podcast. So it's I'm not really getting, my news from it.
But you know, they've been trucking along, but I mean, they've changed hands a few times, kind of got bought out and stuff.
I didn't even realize they were owned by WB.
They got owned by WB because I think Discovery got them originally. And then like when that merger happened and, WB announced they're shutting them down.
Was it like shut down effective immediately or are they still kicking around?
Unclear. It kind of, it wasn't fully clear about that. It sounds like they're maybe trying to still pitch around like the podcast network to some people because they said they tried to sell them but they like no one was buying
shit.
And then which is like crazy, right? You're like damn, okay. They said they're still trying to do some of the podcast stuff and I think it's up in the air about like properties, like is someone gonna try and buy Ruby and like keep that going, like who knows. It seems like it's kind of over. There's I don't know anyone personally there, but I know like Police and Tam like knew some people there, and
there's
kind of a lot of like I feel like
Alfredo's I would consider Alfredo a friend. I know Blizzbear who was there joined a little over a year ago. I watched his streams because I thought he was like super entertaining. Then when he got joined Rooster Teeth, I was like, yo, that's a big deal. I met him at PAX East last year actually. And I was like, yo, congrats on the success. It's really dope to see you with RT. Like, there's still a lot of people I recognize who are still with Rooster Teeth. And so to see, like, a new generation, like Black Crystal, I really like her, too. Mm-hmm. It's like seeing new generation collide with some of the older folks there, like Jack Patillo.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, cool. Like, they have a new generation. Things are still going along. It's not the same people.
Yeah, they can bring new energy. They can bring new ideas. Yeah.
And that's just how these kinds of things evolve, right?
Absolutely,
And then from the it always feels like from the outside looking in, they seem successful because they're putting out good stuff still. They still have a lot of audience engagement and things like that. But, you know, when you're owned by a media company, they look at different things.
Mm-hmm.
Especially Warner Bros. Of all places. Like that. Sure it is.
Like their definition of... Their definition of success is very different from what like an online media company, digital media company defines success. So it's like similar. I mean, on a much smaller scale, but the same thing with Fanbyte happened, where Fanbyte is owned by Tencent, and Fanbyte was growing. It wasn't at the place it needed to be, but that's never how these things work. They never.
Yeah.
Oh, next year we're making mad money. Like, no, that's not how that shit works. But for Tencent, who's a publisher of you know how many games making millions upon billions, they look at something like Fanbyte and like,
what are we doing?
And then so it's like, well, let's on a spreadsheet, I guess we'll shut this down. And that's kind of
it sucks.
Long story short, that is kind of what happened with Fanbyte. So
Fanbyte seems to be happening with Rooster Teeth, a lot of places.
I do think it's like it's really hard when you bank so much on like personality based content to like keep that going after a lot of the original people have moved on, changed hands.
Oh,
like
100%.
Even though I love seeing like, I hate to say it, I sound like an old man, but like the younger generation come up and do this. It's like, it doesn't always get that same response.
Yeah, same.
And it can be tough to kind of build that, which sad to see, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's just how these things go.
But I just followed Redverse Blue for, I think, until Halo 3 when I was a kid. And like, I honestly did not know there was more to Rooster Teeth until much later.
Dude.
Oh, yeah.
Because I just watched Redverse Blue because I thought it was like, there's really nothing like that. Like,
I thought their skits were like hella fun. Yeah. Like, some of their live action stuff. I was like, dude, this shit's hilarious. Like, oh, I wanted to work there so bad. And that was like definitely like one of the places. Yeah. Like, oh, yo, could I like work there? Like, specifically because they did a lot of like live action and video stuff. I'm like, I know how to hold the camera. Like, put me in, you know?
It's sad to see these, I don't know, brands, but like just these companies that, or these, I guess I'll say brands like, that you kind of grow up sometimes engaging with, or just like being in the orbit of.
Yeah.
Right. Cause like, collabing with Kind of Funny on a bunch of stuff. I cross paths with a lot of Rooster Teeth people and they all seem really cool when you interact with them, when I'm on Kind of Funny content with them, whatever. they seem like really, really cool people and like influential too. It's just like you said with Les Paul, totally. Like they, you might not know it outright, but in the early days they were influential.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, yeah, yeah. It's sad to see. I will. I mean, there's still a lot of great personalities there,
totally.
But there's so much, and I'm sure they'll find success in other capacities. But I think what folks might not realize is how much of that, how much of that work is done behind the scenes by people you never see on camera.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And those are the people who probably are going to struggle more when it comes to finding new work in this space.
That is, I was literally talking about that with Lucy earlier. Yeah. Where it's like, you know, because people were even being like, oh, like the podcast might still go on. But like someone was saying like, hey, like a lot of the people behind the scenes of the podcast are saying they got fired or got let go or, you know, yeah. Like it's just like, yeah, you don't realize how many people actually like are involved in a production. Mm-hmm. And
I mean, this podcast alone, what, 30 people work on this?
Yeah, so. I mean, yeah, you don't see all everyone behind us making sure we're doing our thing.
Yeah,
and a lot of mouths to feed over here.
Yeah, hold the camera light right there. Perfect. Thank you. Yeah. Actually, can you lower? No, that's fine.
We're a little, things are a little different out here. We just turn off, flip a button and we do shit.
Yeah, we're a lot more of a skeleton crew out here. But yeah, it's... productions are way more involved than people I always assume they are.
Yeah. Even if it's just like two or three other people who help with production.
That's still two or three other people don't know what to do. And like you said, don't have that like social clout to just be like, oh yeah. Like,
it's,
you know,
it's harder to leverage that.
Yeah. Right? You can't leverage it that way. Like, yeah.
So damn.
Yeah. Pour one out for Rooster Teeth, man. 21 years.
It's a long time.
Well, all right, let's get off the depressing news, I guess.
Yeah.
Some video games. Michael, you have been playing the hot video game of the week.
Ooh, the hottest video game of...
Now, when you say
one
hot...
One of the hottest... Yo.
Now, when you say hot...
Oh, my God.
What kind of hot are we talking about here?
Listen, I got
He's thinking of two things.
I'm thinking of many things. my girl Yana. Oh, my God. The way she's animated when she... Never. Okay, anyways. Unicorn Overlord. I talked about it for preview. I did the preview for GameSpot. I did not review this game, but I have been playing it. And the review embargo's up, so I can talk about it in full. I haven't finished the game because that game was very long. It's very intense. Ooh. But man, there's this Vanillaware, so you know it's got baddies. Oh my God. No matter what your taste is. If it's
they got you covered.
I have the art book for I got sent the art book for Unicorn Overlord, yeah. And it has all the character art.
Do the pages stick together? Sorry,
for now they don't. See about it. See about later. Dog, the character designs in this game are crazy. I talk about it in my preview, but now I got to see so much more of the cast, and they got like big buff ladies holding axes who are 7 feet tall.
Yeah.
Got hot witches and burly men with big armor. And then
y'all thought
twinks and angel twinks. And
y'all thought Baldur's Gate 3 was horny. Let me tell you.
Let me tell you about it. Unicorn Overlord. Well, the character designs are horned up, but you can't get domed up in Unicorn Overlord. Not from what I've seen. I have seen Baldur's Gate 3 though. Ooh boy. That's just crazy. But Unicorn Overlord is a very, very good game. It's been getting a lot of praise across the board, and I tend to agree with a lot of the reviews out there. It's a very thoughtful strategy tactics RPG game. As I've talked about before,
right.
It's kind of a half real-time strategy, half auto battler. So if you know what Ogre Battle is from back in the day, it is very much that. And it's been a very long time since there's been an Ogre Battle style game. And what I mean by that is that you have squads and you fill them with individual units. In this game, you could have up to 6 in a single unit. And then you send them off to battle. And depending on how you construct your unit, whether it's like, I have a white mage in the back to heal my fighters in the front, and I have a tank in the front who will soak damage. And then you can set up their skills to activate under certain circumstances within that battle. So you send them off to fight, and then it all just goes. So it all plays out in sequence. You don't even touch you don't touch any button. I set up my squad to work this way. Let's see if they can take on this other enemy. So it's they take turns based on like a bunch of stats. They do damage. They target certain enemy types based on how you set them up. So there's so much planning. This game is all about planning how you use your units. So it's not like a Fire Emblem or an XCOM where you have a grid-based
How do you plan them? Like, is it like, okay, this unit I want to kind of be like focusing on this area, or is it position-based? Is it like here's the moves they can use? Like, I guess I've never played Ogre Battle, so I don't really know, like, what does that entail? What is like setting up your crew entail?
Yeah. So when you go into battle, you can think of it as like an RTS where, okay, we have an enemies over on this area and then my starting base is here. So before you even start, you need to assign individuals into a squad. So in the menus, you basically choose like, okay, I'm going to build a unit around this cavalry guy who can move faster on the battlefield. And so I'm going to have him in the back. So you have like a grid. So you have a unit of six, front line and a back line, and then you can choose which individuals you put on it within that party and how you position them. So then they are like one entity on the battlefield, and then you command them to like move there. So that's where the real time strategy part comes into play, where you like command them to move to a certain area.
But then like the actual battles.
Yes. Once they clash with a unit, then the game pauses and says, okay, we're going to go into battle.
Ah.
Confirm to like do this, that. And then that's when those two units engage. It goes into like a different cutscene. And then that's when it all the logic based stuff plays out. So okay. That's when you actually have combat. So yeah, that's how they mix them. So you have different objectives such as take this hill or capture this base, whatever, or just eliminate all the different units. There are limitations in terms of like how many units you can put on the field, which ones you can use. But that's part of the fun, is just digging really deep into the menus and the systems. It's a very menu heavy game, so you need to be into that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's I'm enjoying it because it's a nice change of pace. In my preview, I called it like a fresh take on strategy RPGs, which I agree with because I wrote it.
I hope so.
But it's really weird to call it that. I feel that way, but it's really weird to call that because here is a basis of something that came out in the 90s that was never touched on again in any like significant capacity since then. So in a way, we're doing something new by reaching way back to something so old that probably not many people have even played or realized or thought about. So it's, mechanically, gameplay wise, it is a ton of fun. It takes a lot of effort. You have to be in the mood for this sort of thing. Sure. I'll say, just cause it takes so much mental energy.
Is it on Switch?
I'm playing it on Switch. Okay. Yeah, I've been playing
it
on Switch.
It feels like a good Switch one.
It's a very good Switch game. Yeah, it runs really well. Load times aren't crazy, but it's definitely something I can like easily pick up and play rather than sit at my PS5 in my living room.
Yeah,
I don't want Bless to walk in and be like, "Oh, you got a whole squad of witches with their titties out." Like, I mean, hell yeah.
You're like, is that tactically the best option? I don't know.
Kinda. She could duplicate herself and then you cast two magic spells.
Wow. So,
you know what I'm saying? Dudes will walk into my living room and be like, hell yeah. And by dudes, I mean Bless and or me. So yeah, it's really fun. The story wise, it's fairly straightforward kind of fantasy stuff. Kind of touching on elements that you see in Fire Emblem games.
Sure.
Not as poppy or, I mean, some of the older Fire Emblems are fucking dark. But I mean, since Three Houses, I feel like, and with Engage, I feel like Fire Emblem has taken a little bit more of a colorful take on, even though like bad shit happens in those games, like more colorful take on the fantasy genre. But this one is very much like, I am taking back my kingdom from your bitch ass.
Like darker and hornier.
Darker, hornier. Dude.
Is there any, like, because we were talking about Fire Emblem before, is there any, like, I don't know, like, when you're not battling, is there, like, a social element to it? Like, are you talking to your party members, improving relationships, whatever?
Yeah, there are, like, key characters, because you could have, like, multiple other units who are nameless, I guess. But there's, like, core characters within your unit who are characters who, there's no permadeath either, but these are, like, core characters who are involved in the story, and you have bond conversations. So there's still, so the same as support conversations in other Fire Emblem games, this game has it too. You get a little bit more backstory. Some of them are kind of interesting, and sometimes they feel like, I feel like this information would have been nice to have in the main story about this character.
Sure.
Some of them are kind of whatever conversations, like, cool, well, at least I upgraded my bond rank with this person. Because it all revolves around a main character. He's supposedly taking back his kingdom, and he has a bunch of friends now. So there are a little bit of the social element, too, that plays into the rest of the game, which is cool to see. I mean, I feel like I mentioned this in my Rebirth review, too. It almost feels like an expectation for RPGs to have a social element now. And you see it permeated. It's nothing new, of course. Fire Emblem's been doing it for a long time. But now it almost feels like if an RPG doesn't have those things, it's kind of missing something. Obviously, yeah. Yakuza has been doing it since... Yep. Since 6, really, Song of Life kind of had some of that stuff.
Oh, yeah, like the people at the bar.
At the bar, yeah. And the clan creator stuff, kind of.
Yeah, yeah, sort of. Yeah, yeah, that's a good point.
And then, like a Dragon, obviously, it's an RPG.
I mean, even Zero kind of had that where you'd, like, talk to the hostesses, Majima.
Oh, yeah, 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 of course.
And you, like, building up your... You gotta, like,
a relationship.
Bring, you know, yeah. They've always kind of been messing with that a little bit.
So, yeah, it's kind of just permeated these styles of games, and it's... Yeah.
I love that shit.
I love that shit, too. Yeah, yeah. It's
dope. Sounds great.
Yeah, it's dope. The story stuff is fine. I don't feel like it's not necessarily a motivating factor. I'm not like,
okay,
it's not like in 7 Rebirth where I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna fucking fight Shinra and I need to chase Sephiroth or whatever. Very different game, of course, but here I'm just like, I don't know, I guess I'll take back my kingdom. Who knows? Like, I'll get there eventually, but
as long as
now,
I got these witches with me.
Yeah, I got my hot witches with me, you know what I'm saying?
We'll do whatever you want.
Yeah, and my big axe mommy, and man. Yeah, it's the art style's great. Music is great too. Oh my god, some great battle themes in that game.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of like management stuff too that you can get deeper into to build out your units and have all these different perks and grow your party in different ways. Because there's an overworld that you navigate and towns you can build relationships with as well. There's so much side activities in the overworld too. I kind of like how they integrate the overworld into the actual battles of the game. So you're not just like in a menu, like, okay, I'm going to engage in the next battle and it'll take me somewhere or whatever. You actually like walk over to these different places and the battles happen on that map too. So, it seems like there's a seamlessness in how the game flows. But yeah, Unicorn Overlord, I'm not done with it. I don't know when I'll be done with it, but
seems pretty long, I imagine.
Yeah, it's a very long time. I'm probably like 30-ish hours in now.
That's the thing, man. I'm going to bookmark it, but like right now, like the last thing I need is another. I'm good.
I'm like 4 hours in Rebirth, and I'm like, I want to keep playing this, but at the same time, I want to play like a 4-hour game.
yeah. Well, Unicorn Overlord is not for you right now, I guess. Yeah. People have been saying like 50 hours-ish with that game, which is a hefty investment.
Yeah.
But so far, I feel like it's been worth it. I'm not necessarily surprised after my preview. My preview was pretty glowing. And then now having played the full game, I'm like, I was right. It's just fire. Especially once you get like the characters later on in the game. You know what I'm saying? I got my favorites in my... I got a lot of favorites in my units that... you know what I'm saying? Crazy. Look up any Vanillaware art. Look up any of their games. Except for 13 Sentinels. Dragon's Crown. Oh boy.
Yeah,
Dragon's
just, Crown. Just don't do it at work.
Forget that.
maybe don't do it on the work Wi-Fi.
You do it on work.
Or do it.
I don't give a fuck. But yeah, Unicorn Overlord. That is available on Xbox, PlayStation, and Switch. Not PC. Vanillaware doesn't put their games on PC. I didn't realize that.
Oh, that's kind of a bummer.
Or most of them, I guess. But this is
because of mods.
Yeah.
The mods. That's probably why they're like, we can't give that power to the world.
They don't know how to act right.
I kind of want to play the game with a keyboard and mouse though, because it's like a strategy game where you're controlling several units on an overworld. Yeah. Like,
play it on your Xbox, plug in a mouse and keyboard. Yeah.
There you go.
Have you ever done that? Have you ever plugged in a mouse and keyboard?
No, on a console.
I don't think I've ever.
I did it once to like see if it worked, and it was like a Call of Duty game. And I was like, yep, I'm playing Call of Duty on my console on a controller or like mouse keyboard. I'm like, that's weird. Why would I do this though? Like,
Noobs, dude.
Yeah. I was like, I guess that's cool. I'm like, weird. Kind of weird though.
Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, it's the game of the week, I would say. Game of the month, maybe.
Game of the year, maybe.
Well,
whoa, dude. That's crazy.
I don't know, man. Dude,
who knows?
Dragon's Dogma 2, man. That comes out this month. Right at the end, too.
Preview embargo just went up as well.
It did. You should go check out Kurt Indivina's preview on the game, both on GameSpot.com as well as YouTube channel. Put out an excellent preview. I also was there, too, so I did play it a little bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I could talk about it. I had never played Dragon's Dogma, so I didn't know what the fuck I was doing.
Dragon's Dogma seems like that seems like Jean-Luc Core.
It does. I think it is, having played it. Because I've had multiple people tell me, like, oh, you've never played Dragon's Dogma? Like, this seems like this is something you'd be into. And I definitely was into it, but also I was just like...
It's a weird game to preview because it is not like most games, I guess.
It feels dense with, like, systems, and I was just like, yo, I don't know.
Even the control scheme is, like, very different from traditional sort of action-adventure RPG games to the point where, like, because I previewed it. Months and months ago, like the first preview they did, and I had played the original only a little bit, and then I went to this and I was like, oh my god, these controls, like I need to take time to wrap my head around these controls. And when you've only got like 45 minutes, it's like, by the time I was done, I was like, okay, I understand what I'm doing, and now I'm done.
Well, even like just the way that game is framed feels like it's really trying to like immerse you in its world. Where, so like in the when you play like two sections of a demo in like different parts of the map, and the first one's in this like small town, and it's very much like you show up and you got your party, you got your pawns, and like every 5 seconds, like someone's coming at you being like, yo, I need help with this, I need help with that. Like it felt very like D&D party kind of, where you're like the party rolls up and everyone's just like, hey, help me with this, find my kid, or you know, get this stone. And I'm like, oh, okay. But it's kind of cool because the game, so like the quest I picked was like, okay, like this kid went missing, you got to go find him. But the game does not tell you where the kid, it's not like, hey, here they are, go follow the checkpoint and get him. Like you have to walk around town and talk to people. And
oh, you have to talk to people.
You have to talk to
it's
people.
The worst.
And they're just like, oh yeah, that kid, they were messing around in that field over there with the flowers. And you're like, what flowers? So you like go out and talk to other people. And they're like, oh yeah, the flowers at night, they glow blue, so it's easier to see. So you're like, oh, okay. So you wait till night, and then you follow this like trail of flowers that leads you like through this cliff. And then you're like, oh, okay. And then, so it's like, it felt really cool where it was like, oh, I'm like naturally like picking
up
clues.
Sounds like you're doing detective work.
Kind of.
So it's like, Kurt Core.
I know Kurt loves Dragon's Dogma.
Yeah.
And so I liked that aspect a lot. Like it felt cool. It's like, oh, okay. I don't know. I felt like I had to really like prepare my party for like this journey we're going on. Cause the game technically has fast travel, but it's like a consumable and it doesn't really work the way you'd think like fast travel would work. So it is a lot of like, when you're going to go out, you're kind of making like we're going out on a quest.
You're making a very deliberate decision.
And it was cool. We're like, you know, went on this like path to find this kid and ended up like fighting this like ghost banshee. And then like I fought a troll, which was super funny because the troll like, I got like 90% of his health down. The troll just picked my ass up and threw me off a cliff.
Damn.
And I had to like walk all the way back up. And when I walked up, the troll's just dead and all my pawns were like standing around it. And I was like, good job, everyone.
Yeah.
Hey. Oh, also, best thing in that game is when you win combat, if you're near a pawn, you and your pawn will like give each other a high five.
Oh,
and
hell
I was
yeah.
Like, yeah. Oh, we did that. Oh, it was cool. I like the pawns, even if they do kind of like, they kind of repeat a lot of the same lines over and over. I heard them a lot. And I was like, uh-huh, yeah. Oh, okay. Tell me more. But it was cool. It's like, you know, like I felt like, oh, I'm like going on this quest, like find this kid. And it felt like there was constantly like stuff around in the world to like do and like interact with that felt meaningful. And then save the kid. And then the game's like, all right, walk all the way back with the kid. And I was like, oh, okay, let's do it. And then like had to like escort him back. And it was neat. It was fun. I do not understand half of those game systems at all, like how pawns work. I didn't really get it, having not really played it, not having a chance to. I imagine from what Kurt described, it seems like it's very similar to the first one, although the pawns do seem to kind of also fill a role for certain things. So like there are quests where like if you have a pawn that is of a certain like type, they'll like help you out. So like there's one quest where they're like, oh, we need to go find this certain object. It'd be really cool if we knew someone who was like a scoundrel, because they know like that that scene. And so like, if you had a pawn with that, they'd be like, hey, I know about that and I can lead you there. And so like, you can change out your pawns to kind of like, not just help in battle, but also help in terms of like what kind of like quest you're doing and stuff, mm-hmm. which seems neat. But yeah, I mean, it was mostly just kind of me running around, getting to grips with like how the game felt. I think it looks beautiful.
Yeah,
it's a gorgeous looking game. And I did really like the combat. What I did, like each weapon felt very distinct and satisfying.
It looks like a chunky game.
Very chunky.
Did you fight like a griffin or like a
flying thing? I sure did. I was fighting like a giant rock monster, and then like, dude, I was fighting that thing for like 20 minutes and I'm just like, I almost got him. And then this fucking griffin just comes out of nowhere and just starts fighting me too. And I was like, what the, come on.
Yeah, they're texting each other like, yo, I'm throwing hands at this spot. Like, I need you to come through.
Be there in 20.
Send dudes.
Mm-hmm.
When I did my preview, it ended with a griffin fight. And it was so much fun because you're just like climbing on this thing, stabbing it while it's flying around, crashes to the ground, and your pawns are like shooting arrows while you're just being whipped around. It's pretty cool.
The first class I got to mess with was you get this like spear, and there's this one move where you like you kind of like almost like not teleport, but like kind of like push yourself like up in the air, and then you can do like a slam attack. So I would like push up in the air and then just like time it right and slam down and like right on their head, and then you like land right on them, and then you're just stabbing them, and you feel so badass when you like pull that shit off, and I'm like, oh, this is cool. So
that's what's up.
Yeah, I dug it quite a bit. I'm
excited. Did you venture at night at all? Because that was one thing in the original that was kind of unique, was that the monsters are much scarier at night and you can't see at night unless you've got a torch. So it's and without fast travel, it makes traveling at night very dangerous. But sometimes you just end up.
No, totally. Yeah, I had to go at night to find the boy, and I ran into like a weird ghost thing that like wasn't there during the daytime, and it was cool. I was like, whoa, like this felt unique and different. So I'm excited for that game. As I kind of mentioned earlier, big ass RPG that's probably going to be, you know, 50,
10 hours.
Maybe a
brisk 80 hours.
Yeah. So there's a part of me that's just like, I don't know if I want to start that like right when it comes out. Unless I'm covering it for work, but who knows? I'm just like, man,
it's not the
I'm eating good, but I'm eating a little too good right now.
Yeah. You know, you can't eat prime rib every night.
Every night. You get a little sick of it.
Yeah. It's just too, it's too much.
Too heavy. Yeah. It's heavy.
Ah, oh, man.
That's why you got to be playing Balatro.
Oh,
I do need to. Great. I need to give that another try.
Is that your game this week?
No, I've been playing. I finished Final Fantasy Remake and Intermission.
Hell yeah!
Nice.
I had played Remake before, like I talked about last week. I'd never played Intermission, which was good. Yuffie's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Are you pro or anti Yuffie?
I haven't decided. Combat wise, I really liked fighting as Yuffie. I like how you can kind of mix the close range and long range attacks with elemental.
She is sick in Rebirth as well. Yes. Her combat sounds amazing.
In terms of like, because I remember I tried playing Intermission, and I think I got to the first cutscene, one of the first cutscenes where she's like flipping around materia and like jumping the camera and like doing all this stuff, and I was like, this is too much right now.
She's anime.
But I haven't gotten to her in Rebirth yet.
Okay.
And Rebirth, I just hit like the first open world.
Yeah, like, you got a little bit to go.
I'm sure I've got a long way to go. Because I was really enjoying the first part of Rebirth. Like when you get all the Sephiroth backstory
Nibelheim
and stuff like that. And then I liked being in Calm, especially doing
Queen's Blood.
So now I'm just like, I did all my Queen's Blood battles, and I'm like, so I got to play through this open world area, and then I do more Queen's Blood. Like,
Where's Queen's Blood?
No, I am enjoying it. The first thing I noticed, though, going right from Remake to Intermission to Rebirth, is the combat feels like 10% tighter. It feels like it clicks just a little bit better. I don't know what they did. I can't put my finger on like why exactly it feels that way, but just right when I picked it up and did that first battle as Cloud, I was like, ooh, they like...
It's kind of lubed up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I
don't know.
Lubed up Cloud.
Ah. Give the people what they want.
But yeah, I've been enjoying it. I have a lot of questions about the story and where it's going. I'm a little worried about like some of what the answers might be, just given how people responded to the ending. I don't know anything about, well, I know about the ending because I know
what happens
in the original, I guess, but like, yeah. I don't know the details. So I'm curious to see where it goes.
Take
combat, combat that game. Yeah, I'm going to take my time.
Definitely take your time with it. I think that's a game.
Going to take my time. I'm not going to try to do everything, but like, I'm going to try to do all of the things that interest me. So I'm going to do all the Queen's Blood. I really like that first open world area, the grasslands or whatever. So like, I'm having fun exploring that. Definitely, I think you mentioned it when you first started playing it, but you were like, you felt like this was the first Final Fantasy game that like nailed open worlds, because they've always been kind of like trying to do that, and they kind of make half steps there. Like 16 was kind of getting there, but not quite, and like the big open areas felt kind of empty. But this feels a lot more engaging to run around.
I think in general, because I was thinking about it, I was talking about this with my brother, where like every Final Fantasy like had like a pretty like established formula for like a long time, like within each things. Like you could point at like, you know, the SNES games all kind of had like a formula, and the PS1 games all had a formula, and even like 10 kind of fits in that. After like 10, like 12 onward, like each Final Fantasy has been like pretty radically different in its like subject and style of just like gameplay. I think Rebirth is the first one I've played where I was like, this is it. This is the formula.
Yeah. You got it. Yeah.
You got it down. I'm not saying you got to do it forever. Maybe give me one more like this.
Absolutely.
That isn't a 7, like a 17. Cause like, I'm thinking like a 17 new story, but like this level of like party interaction, the variety of towns you can explore, like
that's what I'm most excited for, is like, to go to all these towns, because Calm I thought was just
it was
gorgeous, and I was like, this is like, I really liked Midgar in Remake, but my favorite thing about RPGs is showing up to a new town.
Yeah,
and you're like, all right, what do they have for sale here? And you hit up all the shops.
Totally, and that's something that like 16 didn't like quite do right, in my opinion, for me. Like it didn't. It like has some of those, but I was like, nah. Like none of them hit the way it does in Rebirth. Yeah. So like, I'm really just like, oh, Square, like don't throw it all away and start over again. Like
you can't fuck
like
up towns.
Do. Like just. Give me this formula one more time with a different game. Even the combat, like, oh, it's so good. Like,
I think there's DLC in an article on Paste where Final Fantasy, what it's about, Final Fantasy has always been about towns and dudes. And we're like, fuck yeah, it
dudes
is.
Yeah. Rock.
Dudes, come on. Have you played Stranger Paradise? Dudes fucking rock, and towns fucking rock too.
Yeah.
I really like, Calm is great. It's a great, set up for the rest of the game.
It is
where it's like, hey, it feels like there's community at these places. Mm-hmm. It's just enough for me to be like, oh yeah, I do want to explore this region. I do want to do the side quests on the community notice board. Even if it's like dumb shit, like go find this thing for me, or find my Queen's Blood card that I lost.
I'm excited to meet more Queen's Blood players, because all the Queen's Blood are
fucking weirdos. They're crazy. There's like, something about Queen's Blood that just makes you go insane.
What else?
Like,
yeah.
I'm sure you've seen so many good ones, but like in Calm, that there's just all those boxes piled up, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to knock that shit down. And I do. And then she's like, why have you done this? Now you have to play me. And I'm like,
yeah. The Chocobo guy who runs the bar, his lines in particular, there was something he said where he just like, it's like, calm down.
You take that shit seriously.
Yeah.
It's great.
That. Yeah. There's a, in June on, there's one player who, Queen's Blood player that you, who says like, thank you for defeating me. Now spread the joy of gaming. Because they call it game. I'm like, yo, that's why everyone's a fucking freak who plays Queen's Blood, because they're all gamers.
Yeah, there's some real good ones. I won't spoil it, but I'll talk to you about another one later.
Definitely, it's like Queen's Blood is like one of the best mini games video game.
Yeah, it's up there with Gwent for sure, but I think the way that they package it, I guess, with all these different interesting characters makes, I think, more memorable, because like I just remember Gwent. I don't remember the people I played. I just remember Gwent.
Oh, sure.
I feel like I'm going to remember the people I played.
Oh, yes.
No, I was the game. Because I was telling you, like, in The Witcher, like, you go up to, like, the saddest, poorest-looking person with a bowl cut around his head who's like, me daughter just got taken by a ghost, and there's, like, an option to play Gwent. And, it's like, and then it's like, Gwent? Up for a round of Gwent? And then... the music's good, too. Yeah. Anyway. I love Gwent, and I love how it's...
it's so dumb. So good. Yeah. You're not even at the point in Queen's Blood where, like, it evolves. And
yeah,
like,
I'm guessing they add a fifth. A total of five rows.
No,
right?
No.
That's what I thought.
Oh, no, the cards make it look like
no. The rows never change, but like the way cards behave change, and it completely change. Like the Queen's Blood at the
it
like,
turns into something else.
Is like it, you play it in a different way. Yeah. It's like awesome.
Yeah, I do like the way it ramps up. Gradually is like such a good way of teaching you how you can bend the rules, or just like the extent to which the rules give room for so many creative ideas.
Yeah,
it's so satisfying, like taking the board from someone and they just like can't play anything.
That's
right. Keep passing. I'm just gonna keep throwing cards on the table.
Dog, I know you do this because I do this shit too. But you've already like clinched victory. You already won. Yeah. But there's still open spaces. Yes. And I was like, bam, bam. Yeah, I'm gonna fucking run up.
It's gonna make you cry.
There is someone on Twitter that's like, if you aren't still putting cards down to see how high the score is after you've already won, are you even really playing Queen's Blood?
I already won by 40, but what if I won by 60? Oh, that shit's so satisfying. Oh, especially when it's an opponent who's beat me six times, I had to retry six times. It's like
that's happened to me, at least for one of them, where I just kept losing and I was like, I just can't figure this out. And then it clicks and it's like, there's something I'm not doing here that I should be doing.
The thing about the grid is, because they have cards that show like what it does in a five grids. Mm-hmm. That's if like you put it on the top row, it could still affect the two bottom rows below it. So it's like it just shows you what it's capable of doing, no matter where you put it.
Okay. Yeah, basically. Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, I'm probably after work today, I'm going to go back and play more Final Fantasy.
Just for the Queen's Blood. They got to do a standalone.
They really do.
I'm sure they will. Yeah. I feel like the response, like there's got to be one at some point.
They struck gold. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then... They'll do what happened with Gwent, where they'll release it standalone and then realize that it doesn't quite work in PvP and then change all the rules. And
I hope it works out because you play against NPCs, there are ways in which you kind of exploit the systems that feels good. But I can imagine in a PvP setting, there are balances that need to happen that you just you just don't need to account for.
Also, like some of them, sometimes they're really smart, and other times it's like, nah, you should have taken that thing. Like, you're dumb. Like, some of the NPCs are a little dumb. I would actually prefer... I think I would be more into a standalone Queen's Blood where it is just against NPCs and they just...
It's like a top-down RPG style, you know?
Is that
like,
what Thronebreaker...
Thronebreaker
that's what
was Thronebreaker, like
That's
that,
what Thronebreaker's yeah. like. Thronebreaker really leans into the, like, challenge stuff that Queen's Blood has, where it's like, you're given a specific scenario and it's like, here's your cards...
Yeah.
How can you figure it out? It almost to what you have.
It almost becomes more of a puzzle game. Like boss fights are at least from what I remember, feel like more classic Gwent. But then like you'll be walking down a path and boulders will be falling, and then it'll go to a Gwent battle, and you'll have to like defeat the boulders with a certain set of cards.
You know, like the Pokemon trading card game on the Game Boy, where it was like the formula of Pokemon, but you were just playing the Pokemon card game. Just give me that.
Yeah.
I want to just walk around like from town to town and just, but I'm only challenging.
And there's
got to
there's got to be dudes and there's got to be towns.
Dudes and towns. You know what I'm saying? And Queen's Blood.
That's the perfect setup for a card game too. It's like go to a town and play dudes in a card game.
Yeah.
And move on.
I mean, when you do that in real life, it's usually dudes.
Yeah,
so,
I go play MTG at the bar.
They could add a story too, like some Yu-Gi-Oh shit. You know, just like
defeat God. you'll see.
But they go further with that, and make it a whole game.
Oh, absolutely! They were cooking. They were cooking.
They really were.
I also want to shout out my homie Jesse Vitelli, who did a full interview with Hamaguchi.
Just about that.
Just about Queen's Blood. It's like a deep dive on the development of Queen's Blood with some interview quotes. He included a photo that he got from Square Enix from like the physical build. Because when they were making Queen's Blood, they had like a physical setup to really like,
yeah, they 3D printed it. Yeah.
Yeah. To really hone in on the idea and really see how it works in motion.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the process of creating Queen's Blood was this.
And also because they just really wanted to do it, apparently.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Really, they just had a lot of fun.
Yeah. Just guys being dudes. And
yeah.
Like, fuck yeah, I'm going to make this card game. Yeah.
That's something I would do.
Yeah. Super. If you're into Queen's Blood, definitely check that out. That's on Kotaku.
Hey.
I think so. Yeah. Definitely check
also,
that out.
Also, like Square, maybe sell that. Maybe make and sell that.
There are calculations that, especially once you get deeper into it, there are calculations that I would not want to do in real life.
That was like Gwent too, where it's like, it seemed like a great idea. And then I finally played Gwent and I was like, oh, I'm bad at math. Yeah. I can't do this.
There's a lot of, you'll see like when you get high advanced cards, there's some crazy shit.
That game completely changes.
Yeah.
Oof, it's wild. Man. It's good.
That's cool. It's good to hear though that it's clicking with more people.
Yeah. So. I think everyone seems like everyone loves it.
I watched back my preview of Rebirth and I was like, I kind of like Queen's Blood. It's pretty cool, but I don't think it's Triple Triad.
Wow.
And then when I finished Rebirth, I'm like, Triple Triad got nothing on Queen's Blood, bro.
Damn. Looks like you don't agree with your past self this time.
This time, you know what? Maybe I was wrong. I gave Queen's Blood a second chance.
Wow.
I was wrong about Queen's Blood. Dog, that's content right there. Come on.
Yeah, I was wrong about Queen's Blood. We'll make it a video and the thumbnail will just be you looking really sad. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Dog, I can make a good thumbnail face.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's true. Again. Yeah.
That's cool. Card games, man. I know we talked about Balatro last week, but.
Yeah.
I haven't played a whole lot more.
I got to get
into
that.
But
it's the game I come home and I'm like, okay, what am I? I have a couple hours before I go to sleep. I'm not sleepy, but what am I gonna do? I'm gonna play Balatro, and then it's 4 a.m. and I'm like, fuck! I hate it so much, but I cleared those decks.
It's definitely like I'll do really well, and then I'll try like a follow up run, and it just won't. The dopamine hits just not the same, and then I have to like push myself to like pick it up and play again. So the reason I haven't played in a while or haven't played a lot recently is because I just had a great run, and it's like
that's it. Yeah,
it's like. I know I'm going to have to, there's like a bunch of trial and error before I'm going to get a good run because I'm just going to get chit luck for a bit and then it'll pop off and then I'll have the time of my life and then.
It's just like gambling.
Except not like gambling at all. Please put it back on the storefront.
I know, that's crazy. I haven't been following the developments of that, but I know that happened.
That is wild.
I don't know this, what happened?
It got taken off of a bunch of storefronts because I forget who specifically, but basically like some organization was like, this promotes gambling and it needs like the rating needs to be changed. And it like,
that's bizarre.
Storefront. Yeah. And
it's like, there's no real money involved in this.
I think it's just because like it starts poker. Off of poker, you know? Yeah. Like, so I think they were like, yo, gambling.
To me, I mean, like, I think, you know, like many live service, I don't know, they don't really do loot boxes anymore, but that was like a much more evil form of gambling.
Absolutely.
I guess,
100%.
You know, because it's like people
actually
are
taking your money,
lots of money for stupid digital items. I mean, some are cool, but still, it's like,
yeah,
that's how they get you.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this is like,
yeah,
it's a real like, y'all weren't pointing the right direction on this one.
Yeah. I've been clearing a lot more of the decks in Balatro since then, but you're totally right, Jake, where it's so much trial and error because what you realize is when you actually clear a deck and when you finish a run, what you realize is that you spec'd into a very specific way of playing. And if you can't get those early cards to work, you're not going to get deep in your run. Cause the way the antes scale in terms of like how many chips you need to get to pass to the next round. It scales up in such dramatic fashion that like, if you're just not built for this round, there's literally no way you can pass it. If you haven't like specced into, then this is what I do now for every deck. It's like, well, if I don't get these jokers, certain set of jokers, the first two rounds, I'm cooked. I'm just going to back out.
Oh, okay.
So like I've been doing runs with threes of a kind, build around that, or I can build around flushes. You build about around anything, and it's super satisfying when it all comes together.
And you're just getting millions of points each.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's,
but
it's
that cool. happens like maybe one out of every five attempts. So
interesting.
Yeah. But but don't get me wrong. Like, I think it's an incredible idea, and I think it's executed extremely well. And that's just kind of the nature of gambling, it's not a gambling game, but like card games.
Card games. Yeah.
And plus a roguelite too, right? Like
yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's partly because yeah. like, I mean, that was one of my things with Dead Cells. Like the reason I stopped playing Dead Cells, as much as I love that game, it was just, it got to the point where it was like, if I don't get these specific things, this run is going to suck and I don't want to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? And you see that a lot in roguelites. And I think like, it's just, I don't know. Like it's just an issue that I personally have with many of them, which yeah. is why like, I end up falling off of so many, mm-hmm. but I do think one thing Balatro has going for it is it's not really skill based. I mean, it is skill based, but it's not like reflex skill based. Yeah. So it's like, at least for me, like it's very easy to go back to mm-hmm. and play again. Well, like Dead Cells, like my muscle memory for that is gone.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, man. I like that game a lot. I'm probably gonna still keep playing. I'm almost cleared all the decks. I've put like 25-30 hours into this.
God damn.
I know. I look back on it. It's one of those games you just like keep coming back to little by little. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It sneaks. I looked at my playtime like how long have I been playing this game? Granted, some of that's been just idling. I go to the kitchen and leave it on or whatever. I came back and I'm like, my Steam hours are at like 28. I'm like,
oh, you're not even playing. Are you playing on Steam Deck or are you?
No, I'm playing on my desktop. Okay. So I just like, okay. I just zone out. I check my emails. Like, okay, I'm done responding to emails for the day. Open Balatro. Fuck, it's 4 a.m. So, it's crazy, but hopefully people can buy it at some point. It was only like $15 or some shit.
Yeah.
And like as a kid who played a lot of poker, like, man, it's kind of like the drill video we just did. All right, the shit's coming back. Yeah. It's like reflexes. I know how to play poker and shit. It's just crazy. I feel like I'm reliving my childhood day in and day out now. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah.
Speaking of reliving my childhood, I've been playing Star Wars Dark Forces
Remastered. Oh, the Dark Forces Remastered. Yeah. I heard it's a very good remaster.
It's really good. I remember having a copy of Dark Forces as a kid and not getting very far because that game is like difficult and kind of obtuse in spots.
Yeah,
I definitely... it's cool replaying it now because I think in some ways I'm like... I just like understand that game better. So like I was able to kind of get further than I definitely did as a kid, but yeah. I'm about halfway and I'm starting to hit a wall where I'm just like, oh, some of these levels are getting like, what the fuck am I supposed to go?
Yeah. It's definitely like that old school style of level design when it comes to shooters.
Yeah. The pro tip is use the map. Like you hit tab and you can just pull up like the little like virtual map to see where you are. It's not the best map ever, but it's like, oh, okay, I like have a sense of like where to go. But yeah, like there's one level I did where for the most part I was able to play it all without a guide and I felt really good about it. And then that level I was like, where the fuck am I going? And then like turns out you needed to like move an elevator down onto a different floor and then go through like a vent to then get on top of the elevator so you can move forward and you have to have like two elevators. I was like, I would have fucking never figured that out. But like it's cool because like that game is super important in sort of like the history of first person shooters, because like where Doom was more like kind of abstract labyrinthine in its design, this game was like really making an effort to be like, this is a real place that you're going, and it's super cool. And you play it now and you can still like feel that, but the consequence of it is because like they were kind of the first ones doing that. You're like, maybe it's more realistic, but do I know where the fuck I'm going? Yeah. Like, you know, you're kind of, they're sacrificing some of the like, ease of like player movement, I guess. I don't know. Like, it's just like, yeah, it feels like you're hitting up more walls sometimes where you're just like,
I think like games eventually, especially in first person level based games, mm-hmm. they evolved in a way where there's a lot more visual cues that kind of guide you to like where you're supposed to be going. Like,
yeah.
They didn't have yellow paint back in the day.
Yeah, exactly. There ain't no yellow paint in Dark Forces. So if you're mad about it, go play that game.
Yeah.
But it's cool. And like the remaster like looks really good.
Yeah, it looks crispy.
Like looks real clean. You can even switch it back to like the old graphics too, which is super cool if you prefer that, which I think I've been playing with the remaster. There's a part of me that still thinks like there's more like cohesiveness to the old graphics mm-hmm. in some ways. I just kind of feel that about old games in general, but like it looks really great. The only thing is I don't like the default audio choice. You can pick between like, I think it's like general MIDI and then there's another option.
General MIDI.
And the default one is like it doesn't sound right. It's just like there's a lot of like drums on the menu, like on the menu. There's like all these drums, and it's just like ba 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 ba, and like it doesn't sound like a beat or anything. It just sounds like noise, and I was like, I'm like, this sounds awful. Like, what is going on? And then I just switched to the other one, and it's like more like kind of low res, but it like sounded more like actual music. Mm. And I was like,
weird.
Okay, I'm gonna go with this. I was like watching the Digital Foundry video, and I think they had a similar complaint where they said like the audio timing was off or something, maybe. Because to be fair, like that is an incredibly difficult thing to get right with a remaster, because audio back on PC games is all based on just like they were usually like synced to like your computer's like clock. And
oh shit.
Yeah. A lot of like sound was synced to like the computer's like internal clock, or, you know, things like your sound card. So like getting audio timing right on a like where you like emulate it over is like very difficult on a lot of old games. So I think they were saying that is kind of what happened, where like maybe the timing wasn't right. That's why it didn't sound correct to me. So I would maybe suggest trying the other audio setting if you play it, and just see like if you prefer that one. But yeah, I mean, like the blaster sound effects were like super nostalgic. Yeah. Dude, just fucking like shooting up all the stormtroopers. I was like, yeah, like, oh, man, remember when Star Wars was cool?
Yeah, and I do.
Playing this all the time, like Kyle Katarn.
Kyle Katarn is my boy, dog.
Ah, it's cool. They also like redid all of the old CG cutscenes. Like they remade them.
Really?
Yeah, and it like looks, they look great.
They didn't like just like remaster the old ones, or
no. They like recreated them, but
Shit.
So they look like really, but they recreated them to still look kind of in that
like
style,
an old
thing, but that's, they just crazy. Look really high, that's res, wild. And they look fantastic. Yeah. I was like, man, that's like super cool. Like, and I was like, oh, that's like the level of a detail that you're just like, man, like, ah. Oh. Like Night Dive, man, they're different.
Yeah, they really are, man. Their remakes and remasters are crazy.
Yeah, their Quake 2 remaster last year I thought was excellent. Yeah.
Obviously, System Shock, right?
System Shock. Also
last year.
They're working on the, I think it's supposed to be this year, they're doing a, not a full remake, but they're doing a remaster of System Shock 2.
Wait, what? Year. How do I not know about this?
I'm surprised you don't know about it, because you're like,
dog, System Shock
like
2.
Mr. System Shock 2.
Dog, System Shock 2 is like changed. That and Deus Ex was fucking formative for me. That's crazy.
Yeah.
You played Deus Ex?
Fuck you. before
they should do Deus Ex at some point.
Oh,
someone
my
needs to.
God, I will bust the. No, I'm not gonna say that on a podcast. I will have the biggest smile on my face. I'll bust the biggest smile on
You'll
my face.
You'll bust the biggest smile.
Wow. Yeah. Before Persona, there was Deus Ex. that's how I was, how much I was into that series.
The arc right there.
Yeah.
The character growth development.
Yeah, it was a pretty long time. I played the original Deus Ex in 2003, and it wasn't until I played Persona 5 in 2017 when I had like that new paradigm shift in my life where this is now my whole personality.
I'm glad I got to witness that paradigm shift.
You literally lived with me when I went through that. Yeah,
they put out a trailer for it last year, and it just said coming soon, so I'm hoping it comes out this year. But man,
coming soon, me too, baby.
We'll absolutely play that. You think they'll fix the co-op?
There's co-op in System Shock 2.
Did you not know that?
I don't know. Shock. Is that a mod?
Okay.
Because I don't think that was built
in.
Hold on.
Let me make sure I'm getting my facts right. But there is either a mod or like an unfinished like co-op thing.
Yeah.
that like is kind of bad.
Oh, yeah. I played the Deus Ex multiplayer. That shit was bad, but they...
okay.
Yeah.
So, yes. System Shock 2 had a co-op mode that was made.
Damn,
1999. Apparently, it's bad.
Damn, can't play anymore. Comment.
How bad is it really?
It's probably just like janky. You know,
that's the title of a video.
Yeah,
when it comes out.
Oh, there
how
you go.
How bad is System Shock 2's co-op?
Dude, they
really?
Fix that. That'd be cool.
Yeah,
but
that'd be cool. Yeah, but can't run it off GameSpy anymore.
No, it's true. Can't do that.
Only 90s kids remember GameSpy.
Oh, I remember GameSpy.
Yeah, you do.
Dude, that's how I played all the Battlefield games.
Yeah, Medal of Honor, Allied Assault.
Mm-hmm.
Man,
Battlefront,
Star Wars Battlefront
was
on
PC. Oh, the remaster,
they just put out a
I guess it is kind of a
port,
remaster.
Comes out next week, right?
I'm really excited to play that. I'm gonna be honest. Like, I'm just like, oh, I just kind of like do 64 player battles. I'm just like,
LAN, I remember LAN parties with Battlefront because they had the AI bots.
Yeah, so you just like fill it up.
Yeah, yeah, we used to do LAN parties at that Halo 2.
Oh yeah, yeah, that too.
Come on
yeah.
now, man.
Games used to be cool. What happened?
Games used to be cool. And you know what? They're still cool. Damn. But yeah, this is a certain vibe of those old games that I love that it's still being kept alive.
Me too.
By you know, folks like
a co-op mode I've been wanting to replay, but I don't know how to do it. Is Splinter Cell's co-op?
Oh,
my God. I don't think you can play that online anymore with unless you
which one?
Splinter Cell Chaos Theories.
Yeah.
Chaos Theory. I never played Chaos Theories.
Co-op. Chaos Theories was the best one. I thought just because it was like very slow and like. Mm-hmm. They like really used all the co-op actions in terms of like the levels where it'd be like, it's like, okay, you could go through the front door or you could like partner push your teammate up and like you'd slowly raise him up.
Dude.
And then the animations look so good. At least I remember them looking so good too.
Like, that sounds like fun.
Clasp arms and throw the other person up.
Like,
and
very deliberate animations. Yeah. And like all the missions for co-op and Chaos Theory were specifically made for co-op, so they're not just like retooled versions of the single player ones. It's like here's a specific sequence. It doesn't really have a story behind it, but it's like, oh, this is genuinely different content from the original game. So if you didn't play co-op, you're missing out on like a pretty big chunk of the game.
And Sam Fisher like has lines in it too, like he's kind of part of it, but you're playing as like his like underlings, trainees or whatever. Ooh,
that's fun.
It's cool. Yeah, I did like a little garage LAN party with my homie like years back. Like, yo, what if we just did Splinter Cell Chaos Theory co-op, just run through it in one night and drink a bunch of.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's so fun.
One of my favorite things they did in that co-op mode was, so like in Chaos Theory, you had this thing on your pistol. It was like a little like EMP thing that you could point at cameras and turn off. And they would stay shut off for like, I don't know, 10 seconds or whatever. But in co-op, it only stayed off as long as,
you're holding it.
Down.
Yes.
So it was very much like, okay, I got the camera, you go, and then your buddy would run through, and then they'd like look up and get it, and like, all right, you're clear, and you'd run through. It's so good.
It's not just like, oh, these are two people playing this level. It's like you have to figure out how to
stick together. Yeah, it was so
that
good.
So cool. Damn,
Ubisoft,
video games.
Come on.
Video games used to be good, man.
Yeah.
The garage parties.
I'm trying to figure out because like that game is backwards compatible on Xbox, and I'm like, if I just like LAN networked two Series X's together,
could
you do that?
Like, I mean, you can do split screen. Split screen was in it, and split screen worked decently, but like, I don't know. I feel like I'm too old to like play split screen these days.
Yeah, I feel like a fucking child playing split screen, right? If I play a game split screen, I'm like, I need to be playing with like my niece or I need to be 15 years old again or some shit.
And I'm not really paying attention. I'm just like,
Pandora Tomorrow had a co-op mode too, right?
Did it?
I think it did.
I only played split screen for a while because I didn't have high speed internet. So it may have just been online. Cause I remember Spy vs. Mercenaries was just
that.
Online.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And I didn't get to really play that until like the third one.
Chaos Theory,
Chaos Theory. But Spy vs. Mercs was fun too.
That shit was so
so unbalanced.
It is so unbalanced.
So dumb, but like also at the same time.
But that was like that was kind of like the magic of like those old like older games like can be so broken in some ways, but that's just unraveling how broken in the ways in which you can break the game yourself is like that's just inherent to those experiences.
But like the idea that they were like, all right, we need The mercs are in first person, the spies are in third person, and you can just like hang on pipes, and the mercs come out, you just break their neck. It's
just like, you can just like fuck with people too, like the way those games are built, you just fuck around with people.
I got an idea. Well, we have OG Xboxes, and I know we have copies.
We have mad OG Xboxes.
And we also have copies of these Splinter Cell games. We should do it. We just hook them up next to each other. We get a little LAN station going.
Oh my God.
I got
God.
A lot of empty desks up there. We could just get that.
Yes, we do. Before you got to make a big move.
Yeah.
Put the shit to use. Get those HDMI converters for those old Xboxes.
Hell yeah. Ooh, that'd be good.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll go do that.
Yeah. Right now.
Which means we're done with this podcast.
Yeah.
For the week. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Appreciate y'all as always, whether you listen live over on twitch.tv/GameSpot every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific time, or if you're listening, we also appreciate that. Michael, Jake.
Yes.
Thank you for joining me. Michael.
Of course.
Where can the lovely folks find you?
Oh, you could find me and all of my bullshit at Michael P. Hyam on Twitter and at Hyam Michael on Instagram. But this week, if you are listening to this week, pay attention to the GameSpot YouTube page because I collaborated with Jean-Luc and Richard Lee to do an expert react.
Yo, we got an expert.
We don't tell them what the expert.
Yeah. That's got to be a surprise. You got to make them click.
Yeah. You can't know. But I actually have guest starred as the expert in an expert.
It's not anime titties, believe it or not.
Yeah, surprisingly.
Depends on how you look at it. they covered up Tifa in the Junon minigame, man. The woke mind virus. It's taken over. but it is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth related. It is spoiler free as well.
It's spoiler free, yeah.
No spoilers. Definitely check that out. It is something that is very near and dear to my heart, and I'm so happy that it is crazy to me that I was able to reach back so far into my childhood to actually use this 18 years later. Some shit I did in high school became a video where I got paid for it too. Mm-hmm. Motherfuckers got some money to send over to me. So that was nice, but I'm really hyped up for this. This is really dope to do.
Yeah, it was. I had a ton of fun, just filming that with you and just hearing you talk about it. I was just I'm learning so much about him.
I was on some old man shit.
Yeah, just back in my day, and I'm just sitting there being like, oh, I'm learning all the deep lore.
Yeah, and then you watch back the footage of what the fuck is this fool talking about? And I totally get it. I know that I'm turning into that kind of person, but you know what? I'm going to embrace it.
Yeah. I think it's just better to embrace it.
Yeah. But yeah, it's cool. It's going to take quite a bit of work. So peep that.
Yeah. Hopefully check that out. It should go up this weekend unless for some reason some weirdness happens, but it shouldn't. It should be fine. So check out that. Jake, do you want to plug anything?
Last week I put out a lot of videos. Well, I guess I put out two. I put out a Pokemon, the complicated business of Pokemon.
Very good.
Which is a video I'm very proud of.
Super good video.
If you're curious as to why Scarlet and Violet were like they were, definitely give that video a watch. Mm-hmm. A lot of research went into that and a lot of effort. And then I also took a look at a game called Expeditions, a mud running game, I think, or a mud running. A mud runner game. I talked about it last week on the podcast. So people I'm sure already know my thoughts at this point. But if you want a more condensed version of that, the game is out now. So if it sounds like...
And it's an ultra wide.
Then my video is an ultra wide. Ultra wide. That was my biggest motivation to do the video, to be honest. Because I was this would look sick in ultra wide.
There was even a comment that was respect for doing it in ultra wide.
Hell yeah. Oh man. Dutch Rudders. A Dutch Rudder game,
exactly. Mm-hmm. That's it for me. I'm working on others. I'm playing another game, and I think we're gonna have a preview up soon on it. But that's all I'll say.
So, cool. Yeah, and for me, go check out Michael's video. That's what I've been working on.
Jean-Luc has been putting in a lot of work for that.
Great to see it. But thank you for listening, and we will see you all next time.
Peace.
Bye.